Well, it's good to be with you. Appreciate so much the visitors that we have with us, as we typically do. A couple of announcements here at the very beginning. A few weeks back, this congregation participated along with some other churches in the area to send relief money down to brethren in Nicaragua. Ken Parrish is our liaison in that effort, the one who had made contact with the brethren, been working with those brethren down there and transported our funds. And Ken is going to be with us next Sunday evening, the 25th, and he's going to speak for us about that work there and about the trip. I think you'll have some photographs to show on the screens about that and the brethren there, and I think it will be very, very good. And will be a good lesson for all of us. And I know he'll present a good lesson to us. So I just wanted to make that known and encourage everyone that will be next Sunday evening. Also, we already have mentioned, but I want to just emphasize some of the difficulties that Raymond Caban has been having. His back pain and the problems associated with that back pain have just gotten a lot worse, just a whole lot worse. And we just want to encourage everyone to keep him and Velma in your prayers. At this point right now, unless things change, but at this point right now, it would be best for there not to be any phone calls for him. But certainly cards would be very, very good. No phone calls and visits right now, but cards certainly would be very, very much appreciated. And he's really going through a very difficult time, and the entire family is. So we wanted to make that announcement. I want to begin this morning by noting a passage of Scripture. Psalm 100, verses 2 and 3 says, "Serve the Lord with gladness. Know that the Lord Himself is God. It is He who has made us, and not we ourselves." That statement in verse 3 has always been a very powerful one to me. It is He who has made us, and not we ourselves. We live in a world, though, where so many people say, "I don't want to believe in God." And people from different walks of life, young, old, different social backgrounds, ethnic backgrounds, yet common in their desire to not believe in God and to not serve Him. And typically, the mindset of our day among those who deny the existence of God, deny that there is some creator that we need to serve, typically in our day, people will resort to evolution to explain things. And I would say in response, do you really believe that everything in this world, with all of its intricacy and all of its complexity, did it just happen by chance? But that's what people want to believe. It's not exactly saying what the psalmist said, that we've made ourselves. But the evolutionary doctrine comes pretty close to saying that. At least we're part of this material world, and that's all that exists, and there is no designer, there is no intelligence who made everything. We're just all bits of matter, and just by sheer chance, we all exist. Is that really the view that you want to hold? Is that really the view that seems logical to you? You know, we have a capacity as human beings to imagine things. Children have a tremendous ability to use their imagination and to conjure up all sorts of fanciful things. And there can be something very, very good and very, very helpful about being able to imagine things. But that can also be something that we use in a childish way to try to confuse the reality of things. The Apostle Paul one time said, "When I became a man, I put away childish things." And it certainly is true that we need to reach a point where we no longer look at the world in a childish, make-believe way, but we look at the real world in its stark reality. And that's just a mature way of looking at life and existence. Do you really believe, as you look outside, and many have talked this morning about the beautiful day that we are enjoying and the weather that we've had recently, do you really believe as you look out at this world that it just happened by sheer chance? That somehow just by an accident, we all just have happened to evolve in this way. And that somehow by sheer accident, we have been able, contrary to the way other creatures that exist have been able to, we have been able as human beings to have an intellect and to think and to reason by sheer accident. In fact, even think and reason to the point where people think and reason about whether or not there is a God. And many saying, well, I don't believe that there is a God, using that rationality, using that ability to think and to reason, that just all evolved by chance. Is that really reasonable to you? Or is that maybe just a world that we have imagined? In our childishness, is that just some false reality that we have concocted in our imaginings that somehow there is no intelligent being who designed all things? All this just happened by chance, so therefore I don't have to be responsible to anybody else. I think it's more reasonable to think that we're just imagining and concocting this world where God does not exist, and we've come very close to doing what the psalmist says, making ourselves, at least we're not made by anybody. We've just evolved. I think we're just childish. I think we're just trying to imagine. I think we're trying to create our own reality. And we're not maturely accepting what should be obvious to everybody when you look at the world. Somebody made this. Somebody who's more intelligent than I am. Somebody who's more powerful than I am. And I'm here and I'm thinking about all these things because there's some purpose to all of this. And I don't live in some purposeless, randomly existing happenstance kind of universe. There is a God. I really exist for a reason. There's a purpose for my life. I think that should be obvious to us. But there's a lot of people that don't want to believe that. They don't want to believe in a God like that. He's too demanding, some people say. He's too restrictive. This God that we're talking about, well, this is a God that just puts too many constrictions upon me and my life. And if I have to serve Him, then that means I'm not in control of things. He's in control. He's making demands upon me. And some people just don't like that. And I understand why people don't like that. I think that's something that even as a child, we all can realize that we don't like the fact that there's some authority figure over us who's putting demands and restrictions upon us. We don't like that. But the fact of the matter is that we didn't just come into the existence by chance. We had a mother and father who brought us into this world, and sometimes our parents may be demanding and we don't like that. But us saying, well, they're too demanding, I don't want to believe in my mom and dad, isn't going to change the reality. And by the same token, it's not going to change the reality to say, well, God is too demanding, and so I don't want to believe in that kind of heavenly Father who has this authority over me. Well, our saying that He doesn't exist and that we don't want to follow Him doesn't change His existence. It doesn't change the reality of things. Hebrews chapter 12, verses 5 through 11. This writer, so many years ago, made this statement. I want you to think about it. He said, "You have forgotten the exhortation which is addressed to you as sons. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. For those whom the Lord loves, he disciplines, and he scourges every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you endure. God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? But if you are without discipline, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Furthermore, we had earthly fathers to discipline us, and we respected them. Shall we not much rather be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time as seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, so that we may share his holiness. All discipline for the moment seems not to be joyful, but sorrowful. Yet to those who have been trained by it afterwards, it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness." You know, I was pretty demanding upon my kids when they were growing up in my house. I think if you talk to them, you'll find out that there were times when they didn't like me too much. They didn't like their mother too much. We were too restrictive. We disciplined them too severely. There were too many rules and regulations. And when they violated rules and regulations, then there was discipline in the sense of punishment, which is the worst kind of discipline. And my kids didn't like that. But did I discipline them? And did we as parents discipline them and make those demands of them because we didn't care about them? Because we were just trying to serve ourselves and our own interests? Because somehow it gave us some kind of a thrill to be able to have somebody else under our thumb? Is that why we did that as parents? No, when you grow up and look at reality in a mature way, you realize that even though maybe you said all these bad things about your parents when you were under their authority, you realize, yeah, the reason why they made me come in from playing and come in and wash my hands, sit down and eat dinner when I wanted to stay outside and play is because, you know, I needed to eat. And the reason why they gave me chores to do is because they were trying to teach me a sense of responsibility and self-reliance. And the reason why they kept me from doing certain things that would have been real enjoyable is because some of those things were just dangerous for me and not in my best interest. And you begin to realize that. And the Hebrew writer says that's really the way it is with God. Is he demanding? Yes. Does he give commandments and restrictions? Yes. Are the things that we want to do that he's saying, no, you cannot do that? Absolutely. But the reason why that's the case, as this writer reminds us, is because he's dealing with us in exactly the same way that an earthly father would deal with a son or a daughter whom he loves and cares about and wants to grow up to be a mature, responsible adult, so that it will be in the best interests of that child. And the best things will happen for that child. That's the way God feels about us as his children. So you can say, well, all right, if there is a God, maybe, but he's too demanding, I'm not going to serve him. Okay, you can say that. But that's not going to change the reality of who your heavenly father is any more so than if you said, well, I don't like my mom or my dad, and so that's not going to change and suddenly make them pop out of existence or something, and they're still going to be your mom and dad. And it's the same way with God. And the fact of the matter is, yes, he's demanding, but he's demanding for our own best interest and our welfare. Well, that doesn't convince a lot of people. That doesn't solve it. He's unfair. And he's mean. I have a lot of people who've said that to me about God. And a lot of people I know have said, my life right now is so filled with problems, and if he really cared about me, then why does he allow me to go through all of these problems? And when I have prayed, and usually it's really past tense, I used to pray. When I did used to pray, it never seemed to get me anywhere because I was still in the same boat. And there are a lot of people in this world who are going through such difficulties. My goodness, we announce them here every Sunday from the pulpit, the list of people who have just severe health problems and difficulties. It's just monumental. And he just doesn't care about anybody. He could snap his fingers and correct everything and put us out of all this suffering and all this and remove it from us. And he doesn't do anything. He's unfair and he's mean. I will say this, that attitude about God is certainly nothing new. And there are a lot of difficulties that we go through in this world. And I will also acknowledge to you, I don't understand why God makes us endure so many of the things he makes us endure. I don't completely understand that. Even the point we made a moment ago about him dealing with us as children who are disciplined to make us better people, I'll admit to you, even that doesn't solve all of my questions about some things that people have to endure. But I would just say to you that this isn't something new. It's always been something that has plagued people on this earth, even people who had a godly heart. Psalm 110, verse 1. Why do you stand afar off, O Lord? Why do you hide yourself in times of trouble? In pride, the wicked hotly pursue the afflicted. Here in the Bible itself, in this psalm, and frankly, in psalm after psalm after psalm, you have these godly people who are looking up to heaven and saying to God, I don't understand why in the world you keep allowing all this to go on and the afflicted continue to be oppressed. And frankly, as you go through the Psalms, there are so many occasions where with frankness, and sometimes it even makes us a little uncomfortable, it almost seems like they're being disrespectful. They're really saying to God, you're not doing anything. It's not fair. And I just want to say to you that, yeah, there are times when it sure seems like he isn't fair. Seems like he's not. And I'd even go so far as to say there are some times when we feel like he's absolutely cruel for making us go through this. I understand that. And I would also, though, make the observation to you. In Ecclesiastes 7, verses 13 and 14, there, the wise man makes the observation that in the day of adversity, consider God has made the one the day of rejoicing as well as the other the day of adversity. And he makes the point in verse 13, who can straighten what God has bent? That yes, we are in a world where there are things out of kilter and things that are adverse and certainly against what we wish they would be and what anybody would wish they would be. And yet, I want you to think with me, if you will, about some things that the book of Job has to say about that. You know, Job was a man who went through intense suffering. And absolutely, Job felt God was unfair. And when you listen carefully to some things Job says, you sure get the impression he really thought God was just being cruel to him. Because it didn't make any sense to Job why God would treat Job as if he was an absolute reprobate rebel against God when Job knew good and well he'd been serving God to the best of his ability. It just didn't make any sense to him. And yet I want you to look at the point that Job makes in Job chapter 9. I can't read all the verses, but in Job chapter 9 and verse 15, verse 14, he says, "How then can I answer him and choose my words before him? For though I were right, I could not answer. I would have to implore the mercy of my judge. If I called and he answered me, I could not believe that he was listening to my voice. For he bruises me with a tempest and multiplies my wounds without cause. He will not allow me to get my breath, but saturates me with bitterness. It is a matter of power. Behold, he is the strong one. And if it is a matter of justice, who can summon him?" Do you see what Job is saying? "The one who is treating me unfairly, it seems to me," Job says, "the one against whom I have a case is the judge. There's no higher power to appeal to. It's the judge himself. What can I say? What can I do?" And you know, that's the first point that we need to think about. When we're going through times of adversity and we don't want to believe in this God and we don't want to serve this God, you know what, folks? The stark reality is, whether you think he's fair or not, he's your God and he's your judge. And that's the point Job's making. Job does not accept the advice of his wife, who at one point says, "Just curse this God and die." He says, "No, I'm not going to do that." "But Job, you think he's being unfair." "Yeah." "You think he's being mean to you." "Yeah, sure seems to me like he is." But Job says, "He's still the one with whom I have to do. Doesn't make sense to purposely anger him and do the very thing, rebel against him, the very thing I think he's wrongfully accusing me of. Doesn't make sense to go ahead and rebel against him. Then he would have just reason for condemning me." And yet, so many people don't seem to recognize that. So many people, in their infantile immaturity, they say, "Well, I don't want to serve this God because he's not treating me the way I think I should be treated." And so you reject him? The fact that you reject him doesn't change one bit. He's still there. And even if it were true, even if it were true that he's unfair and cruel, you know what? He's the only God there is. You better not make him mad at you. Doesn't make sense the way people think. Even if you grant their presupposition, it doesn't make sense. But I would say to you further, even though at times it seems like God's unfair, and as you go through the Bible, yeah, people who have been trying to be godly people have wrestled with that so often. There are so many times life hits us with things. It does seem like God is unfair and mean and cruel. But is he really? Is that the reality? In Job 38, God finally answers Job. And in a nutshell, what God says to him is, "Who are you to darken counsel without knowledge?" Basically, what he's saying is, "Job, do you really think you see the big picture? Do you think you understand everything?" What God is really saying to him, and he never answers Job's question and never explains to Job what's going on and why all this has happened to him. Never in the book. But basically what God says is, even though you don't understand, you're going to have to accept the fact that I am God and I'm not going to be unfair. And I'm not really cruel. Even if you don't understand how that can be the case, you're just going to have to trust me. What's that remind you of, parents? Remind you of how you had to have conversations with your kid. And that child, just in their youthfulness, couldn't really fathom what you understood from your perspective as a parent. And you just finally just had to say, well, you're just going to have to trust me. And it may seem like I'm being unfair and cruel and all this, but I'm telling you, that's not the case. You're going to have to just trust me on this. And some kids have the maturity to accept that. Other kids in their immaturity don't. But is God really mean and cruel? As Acts 20 and verse 28 indicates, this God who so often to us seems so unfair and so uncaring, this God actually became a flesh and blood human being and lived among us and suffered all the kind of things that we endure in this life. It's pretty good for a God who's supposed to not care anything about you. And then, furthermore, this God who became a human being and lived among us and suffered among us is a God who ultimately allowed himself to be crucified, Jesus of Nazareth, on the cross, just to help us. Just to help us. Now, I may not understand all the bad things that we and other people I observe have to go through in this life, but the sure one thing I can see, this great being loved us enough to do all of that personally for us. I better rethink whether I think he's just so unloving and uncaring and cruel and mean. Even if he were, he's still the only God I have. He's still in charge. But I would still urge us to rethink, as we look at things, whether he really is mean after all. That may just be our immaturity and our perspective in its childlike state. Well, I'll tell you what happens with all this, with a lot of people. A lot of people know and understand and really even deep down agree with the things that I've said up to this point. But we imagine things. We imagine this false reality again. We create this false reality. We maybe don't consciously create it and think it, but we live as if, yeah, deep down, unconsciously, this is how we think. Here's what some people think. I can hide things from him. Oh, they may not verbalize that outwardly, but that's the way people live, as if they think, and deep down on some unconscious level, they obviously must think that they kind of keep things hidden. And there's a lot of people who even claim to be Christians, who recognize and would say, yes, I believe in God, and yeah, I don't deny that he's there and all that, but you know what? They're pretty good at hiding things from other people, things they do that are wrong. There's a lot of young people who are real good at hiding things from their parents. Yet guess what? Young people get real good at that. Because parents are not omniscient and all-knowing, and they can't always be there. We say we have eyes in the back of our head, but no, we really don't. And a lot of people just are real good at fooling others and keeping things hidden. And there must be something in us that just makes us, even on an unconscious level, think, well, you know what? I can kind of keep these things hidden from God. At least we imagine it that way in our childish imaginings. I'm reminded of what the psalmist said in Psalm 11, verses 4 and following. He said, "The Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven." Now watch it. "His eyes behold, his eyelids test the sons of men. The Lord tests the righteous and the wicked, and the one who loves violence his soul hates. Upon the wicked he will rain snares. Fire and brimstone and burning wind will be the portion of their cup." For the Lord is righteous, and he loves righteousness. The upright will behold his face. Folks, you can hide a lot of things in your life from parents, friends, people that are your neighbors, associates. You can keep a lot of things hidden, and nobody will ever know. But this is a God who is looking down. And that's the picture the psalmist paints. He's in heaven looking down, peering down upon the earth. And his eyes are watching. He sees everything. You ever seen any of these documentary shows where the police have a hidden camera and they're trapping the criminal, and the criminal doesn't realize he's being watched as he's doing all just everything illegal? It's right there on tape. There's a camera. And then it's finally revealed to him that he was being watched the whole time. But that's the way it is with God. 24 hours a day, he's seeing everything that we're doing. You're not hiding anything from him. The elders of the church, they may not know a thing. Sometimes people suspect. Sometimes people know more than what you think they know. But even if no human being observes any of the things you're doing, he's looking at you constantly. And you can't escape that. And more than that, as David said in Psalm 139, he's even able to read your mind, and he knows the thoughts in your head and what your motives are and what you're thinking and what you're planning. You can't hide anything from him. Now, in our childishness, we can imagine a world in which we're hiding everything from him. But that's not reality. I'll give you one more thing that people imagine. I don't want to serve God now. I'll deal with him later. I'm doing things wrong now. I should change my behavior. I'm not. But don't talk to me about that. I'll deal with this God thing later and judgment and all that later. That's the way a lot of people. I'll just handle it later. I got it covered. I won't worry about it now. I'll handle it later. I'm reminded of the statement that Amos made in Amos chapter 4 and verse 12. Amos was a prophet in the south, or actually not a prophet normally, but he lived in the south and went up to the north to prophesy on one occasion only. But he was dealing with people who had that same kind of attitude. Well, we'll deal with God later. And what Amos said is, prepare to meet your God. Prepare to meet your God. And sometimes people have taken that passage out of context as if it's some nice, pleasant thing. You know, haven't been able to meet this person yet. Oh, I can't wait to meet him. No, Amos is talking to people who have been trying to live their life away from God and not keeping his commandments and trying to push God off, and I'll deal with him later, I'll deal with him later. And Amos finally says, yeah, you are going to deal with him. Prepare to meet your God in battle, is what he's talking about. Put on your armor. Get your weaponry ready. Because you're going to meet him in battle. Because he's going to come and judge you. Jesus made the statement in Matthew chapter 10 and verse 28. Don't fear those who can kill the body but cannot touch your soul. But fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. He's not talking about Satan in that passage. He's talking about God. He's talking about God. There are people that live their life in absolute rejection of what God commands. And they apparently imagine in their minds, they've created a reality where even if they stand before God one day in judgment, they'll be able to take it. They can handle it. What a fool. What a fool. You think you can take him? You think you can handle him? Do you really? We in our folly, just don't want to accept the reality of what the psalm is saying. It is He who made us and not we ourselves. And it doesn't matter how much you want to rationalize and imagine this and concoct that reality, and it's not going to change the fact of the matter. You didn't make yourself. You didn't choose to exist. He chose to create you and create me, create all of us. And you have a responsibility toward Him. And there may be times where He seems overly demanding, maybe even unfair, maybe even mean. He may seem that way. But as we said before, He came to this earth and He Himself became a human being and died upon that cross because you meant so much to Him. I think you better serve Him, don't you? Can we help you in some way to serve this great God with whom we have to do? Won't you come on together, we stand and sing.
Bring Christ your broken life.